Hello and welcome to the podcast of the Royal New Zealand College of Urgent Care. My name is Guy Melrose. Today we're talking about heart block. So I'd like to welcome back to our podcast once again a friend of the show, Dr. Avijit Barai, who is an ED registrar at Christchurch Public Hospital down on the South Island, and he's also a fellow of the Royal New Zealand College of Urgent Care. He's spoken to us in the past on a number of topics, but particularly around cardiological conditions and ECGs, and it's on that topic today that we're joining him to speak about heart block. So welcome back, Avijit. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me. It's always a great pleasure.
So I think a good place to start with anything like this is what is heart block? Can you tell us what it actually is?
Yeah, absolutely. So heart block, some people can call it atrioventricular block, which are not the same. But basically what it means is that the conduction system has got some difficulties in conducting the cardiac impulse. And it can happen at any place. Commonly, it is at the level of the atrioventricular node or AV node, but it can happen in the bundle of His. It can happen above the atrioventricular node. It can happen in the right bundle branch, left bundle branch. So these are, as a whole, we call it the heart block, or also some people call it AV block or atrioventricular block. So I thought that this is a very important topic because we see this quite often. Sometimes does not cause much problem with the patient, but sometimes it can be quite life-threatening and immediate or urgent intervention is required. So I thought that we'll have a little chat about it so that the audience can be benefited.
So the way we diagnose heart block is with an ECG or some kind of cardiac monitoring, but in an urgent care setting, it's likely to be the ECG, for which we often do ECGs for a number of different clinical reasons. But how do we pick up when we're looking at the ECG that there is a heart block? What are we looking for?
So obviously we need to look at the bigger picture. Urgent care center or emergency medicine, these are quite busy places. So sometimes we go straight to the ECG, but my practice is I look at a bigger picture. I start with the patient presentation. So most of the time, in case of the heart block, the patient can present with a bit of palpitation. Now, we need to be careful about palpitation because palpitation does not necessarily mean that this is a racing heart. It can be just a drop beat, and the patient will say, oh, I am having some drop beats. In some cases, we are worried about very much that if the patient has chest pain or if the patient is on some medication like some digoxin, they can present with sometimes can be quite life-threatening presentation like collapse or syncope, or might have a cardiac arrest even. Very unlikely that will go to the urgent care center. Probably they will come to us, to the emergency department. But from an urgent care perspective, the patients will usually present with a drop beat or palpitations. Sometimes they can have chest pain or some other features as well. Then I look at the ECG. Now in the ECG, as I have talked about in the past, that I go through this in a very systematic way. I look at the rate, I look at the rhythm, I look at the axis, look at the intervals, QRS complex, ST segment, T wave, QTC, etc. Now, there are different types of the heart blocks and they have got different type of presentation in the ECG. It's a little difficult to explain this in audio version. So I have got some YouTube videos, I'll talk about that in a second, where I have got some animations, I haven't explained exactly what these are. So in short, there are basically three types of heart blocks, but there are some other types as well. So the first degree heart block or first degree AV block is when there is prolonged PR interval. So normal PR interval is from the beginning of the P wave to the beginning of the QRS complex. And normally it is 120 to 200 milliseconds. That is about 3 to 5 smaller squares in a normal ECG. Now, if it is more than 200 milliseconds, that is the first degree heart block. The second degree heart block is when there is some dropped beat or bit of missed beat. So there will be some non-conducted P waves. So if we see that the P waves are more than the QRS complex, it can be second degree or a third degree heart block. Now, in case of the second degree heart block, again, there are two different types. One is the Mobius type 1, the other one is the Mobius type 2. In Mobius type 1, we have got progressive prolongation of the PR interval, and then there is a non-conducted P wave for a drop beat. In case of Mobius type 2, there is PR interval is constant, the RR interval is constant, and then there is a non-conducted P wave. Among these two, the Mobius type 2 is worse because they can develop complete heart block and that can be life-threatening. In case of a third degree heart block, that is when we have got the what we call the atrioventricular dissociation. So no relationship between the P wave and the QRS complex. So I call it a complete divorce between the atria and the ventricles. So they maintain a complete isolation from each other and no relationship. So here, again, the P wave is more in number than the QRS complex. But the difference between the second degree and the third degree block is in third degree block, there is no relationship between the P wave and QRS complex. While in case of a second degree heart block, there may be some relationship between them. In addition to that, there are some other blocks like a trifascicular block and bifascicular block. We can talk about it later. Does that answer to your question or do you like to go to specifics, Guy?
No, that's a good summary of those. And it goes back to one of the first times we talked to you was you went through that systematic approach for looking at an ECG. And generally speaking, if you follow that pattern, you're not going to miss something like this because you systematically look for every P wave and then every QRS, and you will pick up if there is either a prolongation of that PR interval or if there is disassociation between the P wave and the QRSs. It's worth having that systematic approach so that you kind of pick up the information and the diagnosis kind of becomes apparent just by going through that, rather than thinking I can just look at the ECG and just see it. And maybe cardiologists and very experienced people just go straight to the diagnosis by looking at it from years of pattern recognition. But for us, it's important. Start at the beginning, go all the way through, and the answer reveals itself as you describe the ECG to yourself.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you.
You mentioned briefly at the start there that there are a number of ways that people might present. Now, I guess on one end of the scale, it's possible in an urgent care setting that we pick this up as an incidental finding in an otherwise well person who we might be doing an ECG on for other reasons. They might have come through for, sometimes they're referred from GP clinics to have a routine ECG because the GPs don't have that clinic might not have an ECG machine or it may be broken. Or sometimes they come in for even just an insurance ECG and the clinic will do it. So it can be on one end of the spectrum, you have a very healthy person and it's an incidental finding, or you might be doing it for a different reason, such as chest pain or shortness of breath or whatever. But when is it, when do we start to consider heart block as a cause of some presenting symptoms? And when do we need to act on a heart block, even if they're not symptomatic? Are you able to sort of give us some guidance on when we see a heart block, what do we do?
So again, we need to look at the bigger picture, and we should not treat the ECG. We need to treat the patient. So we need to look at the background. How old is the patient? Is the patient an athlete? Does the patient have got a chest pain? And does the patient take any medications like any beta blocker or calcium channel blocker or digoxin? If they're in chest pain, we need to think about, could it be the myocardial ischemia or infarction that is causing this problem? There are sometimes the patient can have just some upper respiratory infection recently and coming with a bit of fever and a bit of chest discomfort. And if we do the ECG in the urgent care center, you might find that there is a heart block. Now, most of the time, if you find the ECG abnormality, especially the heart block, quite incidentally, very unlikely that this will be quite a sinister cause. Probably it is benign. But in case of the benign condition, we need to keep an open mind and we need to find out if there is anything actually else responsible for it. And we need to identify the cause and treat that cause. The commonest time you will find the incidental heart block is in athletes. If the fit and healthy person athletic person comes with a first degree heart block, that is physiological. I will not be very worried about that. But if the patient comes with a complete heart block, I would suggest send the patient to the emergency department or send the patient to a cardiologist. And that should be done on an emergent basis. It is not like a routine follow-up. Complete heart block, that can be life-threatening. Patient can collapse again and might pass out. In the most challenging part of the heart block, I find to take a decision is in case of the second degree heart block. That is where the money is. That is when we need to identify the difference between the Mobius type 1 and Mobius type 2. In Mobius type 1, most of the time, it's not that sinister. And Mobius type 1, that can be treated in a cardiology clinic, not on an emergent basis, but maybe an outpatient follow-up. Mobius type 2, however, similar to Mobius, in case of third degree heart block, they need urgent hospital admission. They need to go to the hospital, see a cardiologist, and cardiologist can decide whether the patient is an urgent pacemaker or can be discharged. This is not the prerogative of the emergency medicine doctor or urgent care doctor. So in short, what I can answer to your question is, if you find incidentally, look at a bigger picture, look at what the patient's background history is, what drugs, how the patient presented, is any chest pain, is any fever, how are the electrolytes, if we can. If it is a first degree heart block, probably we can follow up later in the clinic, or it may be physiological. I'm not very worried about first degree heart block, but be very careful. The first degree heart block can have some associated features. For example, if a first degree heart block has got a left anterior fascicular block, right anterior fascicular block. If the patient has got, left posterior fascicular block or right bundle branch block, that can be a bifascicular or trifascicular block. So if it is a trifascicular block, again, it treat it just like a complete heart block. So in summary, a third degree heart block, straight to the hospital. Second degree heart block, differentiate between Mobius type 1 and Mobius type 2. Mobius type 2, to the hospital. Mobius type 1 can be treated conservatively. And in case of first degree heart block, just treat it conservatively and might not need anything. But the good thing in urgent care is you can always pick up the phone and send the ECG to the emergency department or to the cardiologist, and we'll be very happy to give some guidance about that.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's always important to ask if you're not sure. You mentioned there the Mobitz 1 and 2. Just let's just to sort of circle back onto that quickly. Differentiating between a Mobitz type 1 and Mobitz type 2, what's your sort of back of the envelope quick differentiator between those two?
Yeah, I think we need to have a very good understanding between the Mobitz type 1 and Mobitz type 2, and there is no hard and fast rule, but there are a lot of different informations that can be helpful. So let me summarize the difference, and I have got this YouTube video where I have got some ECGs and some animations to make it clearer. So first of all, in case of Mobius type 1, you look at the PR interval, and if there is progressively prolonged PR interval, that is Mobius type 1. In Mobius type 2, however, the PR interval is constant. If you look at the RR interval, the RR interval progressively shortens in case of Mobius type 1. So the PR interval prolongs and RR interval shortens. In case of the Mobius type 2, both PR interval is constant and RR interval constant. They don't change. So that is the easiest way to differentiate between them. If you have got some more time, and if you have got a little caliper, or if you have got some measuring tape, you can do some more maths there. In case of the Mobius type 1, the longest RR interval is less than 50% of the shortest RR interval. I know that this is a mouthful, but just if you can use this, this may be the easiest way to differentiate between Mobius type 1 and Mobius type 2. That look at the longest RR interval, and if it is less than 50% of the shortest RR interval, this is Mobius type 1. And if it is double of the RR interval, that is Mobius type 2. So the way I remember is, if it is two times RR interval, the longest RR interval, then that is the Mobius type 2. And if it is less than two times of the shortest RR interval, that is Mobius type 1. Now, as I mentioned earlier, that is very important to differentiate between this Mobius type 1 and Mobius type 2, because that will affect your management. Another clue I forgot to tell you is, look at the QRS complex. If the QRS complex is wide, it is probably high probability this is Mobius type 2. The reason is Mobius type 2 usually happens down below in the lower part of the conduction system. In Mobius type 1, however, that happens at the level of the AV node or above the level of the AV node. So the QRS complex is narrow complex. So I think I made a lot of points here. Keep it simple. In Mobius type 1, PR interval is progressively prolonged. RR interval is progressively shortened. The QRS complex, narrow complex. And the longest RR interval is less than 50% of the shortest RR interval. In Mobius type 2, the PR interval is constant. The RR interval is constant. The longest RR interval is twice the shortest RR interval, and the QRS complex is wide complex. So that is basically I can tell you verbally, but as I've said, I've got some animations in the YouTube video, and that can make life a lot easier to understand.
Yeah, we'll link to those animations because it does help the brain visualize things much easier. And I think you mentioned it earlier, it's always important. If you're not sure, you can always ask. And as you mentioned, a Mobitz type 1 probably needs cardiology follow-up. So it's never a bad idea, if you're not sure, to call the cardiologist on call, who can help perhaps arrange that follow-up, or at least kind of guide you in terms of whether they need to be seen, because if your patient is not well, then that's definitely a reason to refer, regardless of what the of what type it is. But I think you've made it quite nice and clear there to follow, and your video will help to cement that. I've got a question about the relevance of previous ECGs in HeartBlock, and if you have access to old ECGs. Is that an important thing to try and access if you can, and what can that tell you in comparing with a current ECG?
Absolutely. I mean, the previous ECG, we always try to compare to see if there's anything new, if there's anything sinister. However, in case of the heart blocks, I mean, probably the first degree heart block that is old, but if there is any new second degree, third degree block, or even the bifascicular or trifascicular block, I will have a very low threshold to get the cardiology follow-up or cardiology intervention. Even if we cannot get, from urgent care perspective, if you cannot get hold of the cardiologist, just give a ring to the emergency department. We are very happy to have a look at the ECG or even see the patient. So sometimes it can be useful to get the old ECG, but with regards to the new finding of the heart block, I will have a very low threshold to get some second opinion.
And just for being somebody who works in a hospital setting, if we were to call yourself or the cardiology on call, say at Christchurch Public Hospital, how easy would it be for you to pull up old ECGs to cross-reference? Is it something you can do online quite quickly, or does it require going and digging through the old filing cabinets and everything?
The place where I am working at this moment in Christchurch, not only in Christchurch, the whole of South Island, we have got the Health Connect South. So this is the software through which the all the patient records are there, including the old ECGs. So I'm not sure about the North Island, but in the South Island, we have got this good IT support system that through the Health Connect South, we can pick up the old ECG, old nodes from the GP communication, other hospitals. So we are all interconnected with this Health Connect South. So if we can get the patient's NSI, then we can pull up the old nodes. Yes, so that's really easy for us. But in the North Island, I think it is a little bit different. So I'm not quite sure how it works there.
So it's certainly worth checking your local area, what you have access to, because finding your resources such as your previous ECGs are important, and certainly it's good for your clinic to try and simplify the way that you can access ECGs that you've done previously within your clinic, because it is a valuable thing, isn't it, to have a look at whether something is old or new, how have things evolved, and so it's worth
absolutely
looking into
completely
that.
Agree with
you. So we've talked a little bit about the disposal of some of these patients, both to cardiology or ED. I wonder if you could just touch a little bit on treatment or management of these patients, ranging from, you know, is there any medication that might be required to be given in an ED or an urgent care setting, and also any kind of emergency management in an unstable patient? Can you talk to some of that?
It depends on what type of overall condition of that patient is. For example, if it is a first degree heart block in a healthy, athletic person, we don't have to do anything, or the urgent care doctors, they don't need to do anything. This is the conservative management. But we need to identify what the cause of it. For example, in 50% of the cases, the complete heart block, that can be because of myocardial infarction. So these are the patients who need at least some aspirin and urgent call for the ambulance services to bring them to the hospital. If it is complete heart block without a myocardial ischemia, and if we don't know exactly what is causing it, then again, make sure the patient is resuscitated, patient is stable, and then send the patient to the emergency department. In case of the Mobius type 1 or Mobius type 2, there is no specific treatment from urgent care perspective, but again, you can try to identify what is the cause of it. The thing that you should not do in case of the Mobius type 1 and Mobius type 2 is do not give any blockers like a beta blocker. Do not give any atropine, because atropine can cause complete heart block in Mobius type 2. On the contrary, Mobius type 1 is treated with atropine. But as in urgent care, I would say don't give anything until unless you know what is causing it. Instead, you can stop the medication. If the patient is already on beta blocker or a calcium channel blocker, and the patient comes with a heart block, and if the patient needs further treatment to the hospital, just stop those treatments. Do not give any beta blocker, calcium channel blocker, dizoxin. So in summary, I would suggest that for the management, obviously, we need to identify the cause. And we need to think about the definitive treatment. And most of the time, the definitive treatment will be to transfer the patient to the hospital if it is a complete heart block or if it is a Mobius type 2 block. In Mobius type 1, it can be treated conservatively. And again, we do not give any specific treatment. One thing I'd like to make sure is that if the patient is compromised, for example, if the patient has got a complete heart block and the patient has got very unstable, if you have got the training, then if you've got a defibrillator, you can start pacing, transcutaneous pacing. So there are different things that you can do in urgent care, but I will have a very low threshold to get help and transfer the patient to the emergency department.
Yeah, and relay obviously all that information to the paramedics when you're waiting for them to transfer the patient to the hospital. So we've covered what it is, how to differentiate it. We're going to all go and look at your videos to visualize what's going on in the heart and to understand a bit more. And we've gone through the disposal and some of the management there of these cases. What other either resources or clinical help could you maybe direct us towards that can help solidify this knowledge a little bit more for us?
There are quite a few resources out there in the internet. Life in the Fast Lane has got quite a few ECGs. Personally, I have prepared some MCQ questions on heart block. And to make the best use of this podcast, I thought we can combine them together. So if the audience are interested, they can just click on the link. And there are a few MCQs, simple MCQs, but easy and informative. There are quite a few ECGs there. They can self-test on this program. And at the end of this, they will get instant result. So they will know what the length of or depth of their knowledge is. So I think that is the best way to learn that, do some test. And this is a simple quiz they can use multiple times, and it is free. Also, I'll give you the link of my YouTube videos. So I personally feel that the heart block can be sometimes quite tricky to pick up. And it is the use of the different resources that actually solidifies the knowledge.
Yeah, so we'll link to all of those, the your YouTube, the Life in the Fast Lane, and the quiz that you've put together. And so hopefully people can take all of this. It is always tricky talking on a podcast about something that involves something that you have to look at. But as you say, it's bringing all those things together, including how the patient looks and the history and everything else, bringing it together and hopefully coming up with the correct diagnosis and treatment for your patient. Now, last time, I think when we talked about headaches, you mentioned some evolving things that are coming around in the pipeline. And I was interested, has anything changed recently in heart block management, or are there anything out there that we should be aware of that's on the horizon, or any sort of controversial kind of thought processes that are worth discussing that people may have read about or seen?
There are a couple of things a little controversial, and I thought I will just briefly talk about that here. One thing is, the in case of the heart block, if we find a 2:1 block, that is two P waves and one QRS complex, it can be difficult to differentiate between the Mobius type 1 and Mobius type 2, because you cannot see the PR interval, whether it is progressively prolonged or it is constant. So that can be really tricky. Even if we look at the QRS complex and we find that QRS complex is narrow complex, probably it is Mobius type 1, it may turn out to be wrong. So my tip with that particular controversial aspect is, if you are not sure, treat it as the worst case scenario. So even if it is, if you think that this is a 2:1 block and this is Mobius type 1 probably, treat it as Mobius type 2, which means that call the ambulance and send the patient to cardiology or to the emergency department. The other aspect that I find it very controversial is the high-grade block. So high-grade block is, if there are two or more P waves for one, if there are two or more non-conducted P waves in the ECG, that is the high-grade block. And they can be really tricky to identify, and also they can have worse prognosis. So again, my advice in those cases is treat those patients as high-risk patient and send the patient to the emergency department or to cardiology. And it's always very nice for the patient to get the best care possible rather than to miss it. One trick that I would like to mention here is that sometimes if we are not sure exactly what the rhythm is, whether it is a first degree, second degree, or third degree block, you can just reduce the speed of the ECG. So a normal ECG speed is 25 millimeter per second. So if you reduce it, you will be able to identify the gaps better. And that way you can pick up what type of block is or what type of rhythm abnormality is, if that makes sense. That's the trick sometimes I use, and it usually is really very useful.
I've come across sometimes these rulers that have ECG interpretation kind of markers on them to help people work out rates and rhythms and little prompts and stuff. Do you ever use those? Are those useful, do you find?
I had one actually. In earlier days, I used to use that, but sometimes it is probably easier to just take a piece of paper, give some marks yourself, because in the ECG paper, there are always these small squares. So that is 1 millimeter. And then you can use this as a ruler. So sometimes, yeah, it is usually is very useful. If you don't have a formal ruler, just make a ruler yourself, and you can just use this on the 12-lead ECG, and it will give us some information about the heart blocks.
Yep. And as you say, it's very important to make sure you've checked the speed. Is it at the 25 millimeters a second or the 50 millimeter a second? And those rulers, I find, at least have a prompt to make you consider that when you're looking at them, which is not a bad thing.
Absolutely. So a couple of things we need to look at before we look at or interpret the ECG. You need to look at, is it the right patient, right date and time? Is the calibration normal? Is the speed normal? Otherwise, the interpretation will be all over the place.
And I think you mentioned something very important just before about, if in doubt, refer. I think that's something that's applicable to so many different types of urgent care consultations. We have to know a lot about a lot of things, but we can't be as expert as a cardiologist in cardiological things, because we're also then having to, our brain is taken up with abdominal problems and eye problems and fractures and, you know, the vast scope of what we see in urgent care. So there is always that point at which you think, I'm not sure, you know, you might think, I think this is appendicitis. Well, it's always better to refer an appendicitis that you think might be rather than send one home. And the same with this sort of condition, that if you've got any doubt, then it's better to refer and then find out later that the cardiologist felt, oh no, there was nothing to worry about. That's the better way. I'm always happy to fail in that regard or be wrong in that regard, rather than be wrong in the sending somebody home with a problem that needed to be in hospital. And I think that's one of the key things an urgent care doctor needs to learn to live with, is, you know, erring on the side of caution is not the wrong thing to do, and it shouldn't besmirch your reputation or make you feel bad about yourself when you were doing what you felt was best for your patient. So yeah, if in doubt, always ask is a good mantra.
Absolutely. So I completely agree with that. And you can either contact the cardiologist or in the emergency medicine, the emergency physicians, they are experts in ECG. And actually, if you look at the number, the emergency physicians see more ECG than the cardiologist. But we are not cardiologists. Again, we have got our limitations, because we can interpret the ECG. But when it comes to treatment, we need to get the cardiologist input. Talk to the cardiologist, talk to the emergency physicians, send it. With the new technology, we can just take a picture in a mobile phone and send by email or in WhatsApp, considering the patient confidentiality. Always it's very easy to get some help from others. Yeah. And personally, I'm very, very open-minded. So if somebody wants any help, I can always look at the ECG and give some advice.
Yeah, a very important thing. You've got to share the knowledge around and share the decision making sometimes to get to the right answer and the best answer for your patient, and it will save time in the long term asking, because that patient then doesn't deteriorate and become a more serious problem. So the ED physician is then advising, oh no, this person needs to come up, and they come up and get seen whilst they're stable, rather than them having to resuscitate them when they're unstable later on in the day, because you took the chance on thinking, well, I don't want to disturb the ED guys or the cardiologist at this point. So learning to ask questions and not feel stupid for asking questions is an important thing for us all to learn. So thank you, Avijit, again for taking the time to talk to us today about heart block. And as I say, follow all the links in the show notes and familiarise yourself with those links and do the quiz and see how you did. But we'll no doubt speak to you again, Avijit, but thank you for now.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me, and it's always a great pleasure, and I'll see you soon. Thank you.